There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots, independent media, and a critical look at our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmanel, I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is at the controls. On today's program, trying to get more from local cable service, specifically more local media. We'll be talking to Randall Cotton. He is a local media activist here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, in addition to being a volunteer here at Community Radio WEFT. And he'll talk some about an effort to try and bring more community access to our cable system here in Champaign-Urbana. It's something that can happen anywhere there's a cable system. And of course, we'll get caught up with some news headlines. Do stay tuned. And each week here at Media Geek, we try and bring you headline news, news of our media environment, which includes legislation, includes regulation, includes what goes on behind the scenes in the corporate boardrooms, and what's going on underground in the community radio stations, pirate radio stations, underground press, and other citizens' media and people's media outlets throughout the world. And we try and bring it to you because it's not getting covered on your nightly newscast. It's not getting covered except maybe in the back business pages of the most major newspapers in the U.S., and when it's covered like a business news, but we think it's about democracy, and we think it's about our everyday lives, and that's why we bring it to you. And a couple of headlines we start with here is that the U.S. Senate has voted to keep funding for the government-backed broadcasting operation to Cuba, radio and TV Marti, at its current level. The broadcasts of Miami-based stations are funded through the U.S. Information Agency, and the budget is often disputed in Washington. An amendment on a State Department spending bill this year would have cut the budget, which includes $8 million for airborne TV broadcasts. However, the Senate defeated the amendment by 65 votes to 35. And Radio Marti is effectively propaganda, which is broadcast from Miami directly to Cuba, just a scant less than 100 miles off the shore of the United States, with a budget, again, of $8 million for the TV operation for one channel. Wow. One channel of propaganda directed into Cuba, which they tried to jam. Imagine if WEFT, imagine if your community radio station had that $8 million to serve you.
Yeah. What do you think we could do with that? That would be a great sum of money to us.
$8 million would be, if properly stowed away, would be quite the sum to keep us going for a very, very long time, given that we're used to raising funds in sums of $40 and $80 and $120. That's your tax dollars at work.
Well, some bad news for the BitTorrent kiddies out there. The Family Entertainment and Copyright Act, approved by the House on Tuesday, April 19th, will make sharing a movie electronically prior to its official release punishable by a three-year sentence and classified as a felony. This includes file swapping as well as DVD bootlegging. The Senate has already passed its own version, and the final version of the bill is not likely to be vetoed by the president. In addition, the act calls for 3 years in cases where a person is caught recording a movie in a theater with a camcorder, and 6 years for a second offense. Even theater operators are indemnified against all criminal and civil liabilities resulting from the detention and apprehension of a suspected camcorder pirate. Also, the family part of the act has provisions for cutting out the naughty bits from commercial video releases. This bill will protect from copyright liability, quote, a manufacturer, licensee, or licensor of technology that enables the making of limited portions of audio or video content of a motion picture imperceptible, end quote. It says nothing about making separate editions on DVDs, but protects software makers that sanitize DVDs content sort of dynamically.
Now, this is interesting now that you can go to jail for longer for shooting a video with a camcorder than you can for shooting a person with a gun.
That's right. This exceeds the sentence for manslaughter, actually. So this is a really terrible a terrible development in our government here, but... You know,
but giving a copyright a pass, because actually exactly. this movie filtering has been a lot of, there's been a lot of talk of it, especially within the Mormon church, within Latter-day Saints, and in places like Utah, where actually there have been stores renting self-censored versions of movies where they mm-hmm. where they bleeped out even things in PG-rated or G-rated movies, which they believe to be a little too salty for their relatively mild taste, and which they... have claimed in some cases to be working on decoder chips that know when someone's going to say a naughty word and will mute it out, and even mute it out of the closed captioning.
Wow.
And which otherwise, if it were to be interfering with any of the encryption schema when a DVD, would be a violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And so that's specifically why this was written in, exactly. is to give them a pass. However, if you were to have a different algorithm, which was intended to add more salty language, indeed, you would be found guilty under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Well, thank you, Drew, for that headline. And you are listening to Media Geek. And we'd like to welcome in the studio Randall Cotton. Thank
Hello,
you for joining
everybody.
Us here, Randall. Randall is a WEFT volunteer. You're a host of The Courier on Monday evenings.
That's great.
Which is our public affairs program.
That's what brought me to WEFT, actually. I was interested in supporting The Courier beyond just contributing during Pledge Drive. And I've been doing the Monday Courier for about a year and a half now. And I'm actually a WEFT board member. But I should probably qualify that as I speak on this program, the views and opinions expressed here are on those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, station manager, Prairie Area Incorporated, or the WEFT associates.
That's right.
Yeah, I do want to qualify that.
And in the last year or so, you've also become active with regard to public access television.
That's right. And part of my sort of a media activism, which, you know, kind of came upon me as a surprise, you know, in airshifting The Courier, you know, Democracy Now! Was obviously a big part of that. My motivation for wanting to contribute toward getting The Courier, helping The Courier get aired on WEFT. And what's out of that came the idea of, actually, it was during a pledge drive. Actually, I was looking at the Democracy Now! Website, and I saw that their Democracy Now!, the video edition of Democracy Now! Existed, and that could be put on public access cable stations, and it was popping up all over the country. And it kind of surprised me that this was happening, but wasn't happening in Urbana, because Urbana is known to be a fairly progressive town. And so I started looking into that, and... it turned into quite a project.
Yeah, so we documented a bit of it over the last year, and even had some of your comments in front. We played some of your comments in front of the commission, in front of city council.
Right, and it turned into basically a 9-month battle that required written petitions from 1,200 people. It required folks to turn out at the Urbana City Council chambers for commission meetings and city council meetings. It required a city council resolution, actually, before Democracy Now! Was put on. And it really exposed the weakness and the irresponsiveness of our current public access cable management.
And now that... Urbana Public TV, which is the public access television and the only channel on Insight Cable, which is the cable company for the Champaign-Urbana area, is very different from most public access television channels in that it's run by the city of Urbana.
Yes. From what I understand, I haven't done a lot of research on this, but from what I understand, the much more common arrangement is that the cable channel, the public access cable channel, is run like by an independent nonprofit group, and in many instances they're completely independent of political influence or political management by politicians,
and often funded as part of the franchise fees which the cable companies give back to the cities in exchange for the right of way for putting up, for stringing their cable and their fiber and having the right to do these things as an exclusive monopoly.
Right.
in the cities where they operate.
Exactly. They're funded by a federally mandated option for cities to request, well, essentially demand and negotiate at franchise negotiation time, a certain percentage of cable bills to be set aside for public access cable TV. And, you know, unfortunately, in our town, it's really kind of in Urbana. There is no, by the way, parenthetically, there is no public access cable set aside for Champaign. Champaign elected, for whatever reason, not to contribute towards public access cable. But, unfortunately, the Urbana side is not really public access television because it's not really very accountable to the public at all. It's accountable ultimately to a single local politician because, in truth, the management, the station is operated entirely under the authority of the administration of the city of Urbana and essentially the mayor. And, you know, as many of us know, and as I outlined in various pieces I've posted to the IMC website, that was really the source of the block for Democracy Now. There was resistance from the mayor of Urbana, who has since been voted out of office, I think partially in some finite way because of this issue.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're trying to do now is first of all, I think people need to know that there's a joint commission which helps to recommend policies for public access TV, and also a joint commission which works between Champaign, the cities of Champaign and Urbana, over the cable franchise, since it's you know, negotiated over two cities which are right next to each other. For people who are not here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, they're twin cities. And it is negotiated between two cities, Urbana and Champaign, who have a role in all of this. And you're now part of an effort to try and bring different, more of this sort of traditional model of public access to Champaign-Urbana as part of the next negotiation with our company here, Insight Cable Communications.
Yeah, I think partially as a result of the you know, the Democracy Now! Battle and various other issues surrounding that, folks in our community began to realize that change needs to be made in this area. And coincidentally, we're coming up on pretty soon now on the negotiating period for the next cable franchise contract. The contract is actually up in 2009, but the negotiations can start as early as February 2006, and that will be here before you know it. And what's come about is that there's been a study committee put together by the Champaign-Urbana Cable Television and Joint Cable Television and Telecommunications Commission meeting. This is the advisory body between the two cities that advises both city governments on cable telecommunications issues. And they put together a study committee of quite a few people, actually, people within the, all the committee members are ex officio members. They've taken some people from out in the community, including myself, and people from various organizations who've been involved in public access before, like the League of Women Voters. And they've put together a committee to study various possibilities for changing the arrangement of how public access cable is run as part of the negotiations for the next franchise contract.
And so this is sort of an advisory committee, right? So you will not have any power, but you're hoping to...
But historically, their recommendations carry a lot of weight.
Carry a lot of weight. And you're hoping that amongst the committee you can come up with recommendations that are generally agreeable amongst everyone.
That's right. And we've had our first meeting already. And even before the introductions, we introduced ourselves going around the room, it became very clear that... there was a general sentiment that there needs to be a fundamental change in the way that public access cable is run and managed. And there was a very clear sentiment that there needs to be, first of all, there needs to be a separate channel, because UPTV is sort of a mash smudged together of government and public access. And, you know, since it's basically run by the government, it's predominantly government.
Right, which means city council meetings,
right.
And which are very important. We don't want
to
denigrate how important it can be to be able to see these open meetings on your television if you can't make it or you're not able to make it, really. But at the same time, it means less time for public access. Imagine if your community radio station had to give away a good portion of its broadcast day to the air the meetings of city council and various commissions.
It's a bit of a conflict of interest there. I mean, you've got the government programming and the people that the individual politicians want to have on, or you know, mm-hmm. they certainly carry a lot of influence there, and then there's a much more something that's supposed to be directly accountable and for the benefit of the public, and you know, when the people who run it, you know, the paychecks get signed by, you know, the local government. It's really kind of a conflict of interest there, and they're very unaccountable, really.
It's hard then to know whether you can air program that would be critical of your local government and how that would be treated. I mean, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, things like even National Public Radio, you can criticize it on a lot of grounds, but it is distinctly separate from the United States government. The checks are not actually signed by the president, nor does Congress have any authority over National Public Radio. It was done that way for a reason. And mm-hmm. even the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is the funding authority, is a separate independent corporation. It does receive the majority of its funding from the federal government, so there are the purse string controls. But it is self-officiated. It is an independent corporation. And it's actually kind of interesting to me, you know, that this is one of the few realms, you know, we see where we actually have this coincidence of government and media mm-hmm. Here in Urbana, of all places, which, you know, and it is a very interesting thing. But one of the interesting things about public access TV in general is it's one of the few realms where local politics has any influence over media. And I mean this both, you know, in this way we see Urbana Public TV, but also because of the franchise agreement, mm-hmm. which gets agreed upon by a city council, an elected body, that individual citizens have the ability to express to their government officials that they would like to have something, that they would like to have a public access TV channel and have it funded by through the franchise fees, through their cable TV bills and everything else, because there's really no other realm in which you could get that media access through this sort of local democratic means.
That's right. There's no other way to pay for it unless you had some sort of viewer sponsored public access TV,
right? But which is fairly uncommon,
right.
As it goes, mm-hmm. because I mean this was written in a federal law back in the 1970s.
Right. This is an exchange
when cable
for
companies
monopoly.
Were rolling out, which is thought of as an exchange for the monopoly, exchange for Insight being the sole and exclusive cable company for mm-hmm. Champaign and Urbana, that they would have these obligations, or that cities would be able to ask of them these obligations
in return for a guaranteed cash cow operation.
Yeah, because cable companies, by and large, very rarely lose money, except through mismanagement. Mm. Except unless you're like Adelphia Cable Communications, when you get soaked by the owner and his son.
Well, so how much would it be for you guys are advocating definitely a separate channel. I mean, how hard do you think that's going to be politically to do then? What do you think? I mean, because...
Well, I don't think that's going to be very difficult. I mean, there seems to be a pretty wide consensus on that. But that's only part of the that's only part of the answer to your original question. The other thing that many on the commission, and perhaps you know the preponderance of the commission, is in favor of, just from our first meeting, is to have a separate nonprofit entity. Perhaps with a board that is accountable to the government. There's all sorts of models out there, and this, you know, maybe the primary task of this commission is to investigate what models are available and what's most suitable, what fits best for our community, and how to fund it. There are a lot of success stories around the country, and I've done a little bit of research on this, where the local community has spoken up and made their preferences known, and has forced their government to be hard negotiators and insist that they get everything that's entitled to them by the federally mandated public access franchise agreement fees, to not only fund a service, but actually offer capital up front, mm-hmm. like maybe $500,000 in some cases, maybe mm-hmm. not for our community this size, but to actually establish a building and equipment and all of the connections necessary to
and it is a matter of negotiation, and I think it is true that your local government is not going to negotiate hard on an issue if they don't believe there's support amongst the citizens, amongst the voters, to do so.
Exactly, and part of the the task, I think, of the study committee is to determine exactly what support out there is out there in the community for this kind of service, and to rally that support, perhaps,
and I know
make
that,
sure that their voice is known.
And I know that most recently there have been struggles over public access in places like King County, which and in Washington State, which is the home of Seattle, and they've gotten a great deal of citizen input and really rolled along and got rolling a real citizens movement behind public access and helped to push their city and county officials to push for more. Thanks for joining us, Randall.
Sure.
Finally, we close out this edition of Media Geek with some news about a free radio station in Mexico City, Radio Zapote, which is facing possible eviction from the university where it operates.
So we were talking with DJ from Radio Zapote, and he was just telling us about the history of the station and the situation that's going on now. Could you maybe give a summary of what he said?
Well, Radio Zapote is a free radio or community radio that began to function as a part of the caravan of the EZLN, the Zapatista caravan to Mexico City in, what year was it? You know? In 2001, I think, but we can check those facts. because the Zapatistas used the ENA, the Escuela Nacional de Antropología en Historia, the National School of Anthropology and History, as their sort of home base while they were in Mexico City. And so the idea was, like, in order to give get the word out that the Zapatistas were here and what they were doing, is they set up a radio, and it functioned during the time of Zapatista caravan within Mexico City. And afterwards, everybody decided, you know, this is a pretty good idea. We should keep it going. And in one form or another, it's changed. Apparently, had several phases, but one form or another, it's stayed in the air on the air until now. And currently, a number of factors are which currently a threat against Radio Zapote from a number of different political and academic figures, both in and outside of the university. The little bit of the story is what's happening with the threat. Well, basically, they're under threat of eviction from the university campus. They're a radio that operates without permission from the legal authorities, so SCT, which is the governmental body that controls. Basically, like the FCC in the United States, the governmental body that controls the communications. And so, there's two commercial radios in more or less in the range of close to the same frequency in which Radio Zapote transmits. So they transmit 94.1, and I'm not sure what the exact frequencies of the other radios are. These two commercial radios have sent complaints to the SCT about interference from Radio Zapote in their signals. The SCT, the Mexican FCC, responded by calling the director of the National Institute of Anthropology and History, which is the body that the School of Anthropology is part of the Institute of National, it's like a body within the National Institute of Anthropology. So the director of the institute has authority over the director of the school. The director of the Institute of National Institute of Anthropology and History is someone who arrived in his position 2 weeks ago, from what has been called by one of the DJs here in Radio Zapote, golpe de estado, a coup d'etat. And basically what happened is the former director, who was democratically, you know, was elected among other sort of governmental bodies, democracy in scare quotes, but anyway, it was elected. Was forced to resign. The former director, who was had more leftist tendencies, forced out of the position, and immediately was put in the director seat. Someone who belongs to the party of the PAN, which is the ultra-right party of Mexico, the party of Vicente Fox, the president. And this new director, receiving the call from the SCP, in turn calls the director of the School of Anthropology and History that Reyes Zapote has to leave immediately, that there can't be an illegal, quote-unquote illegal transmission from the School of Anthropology. The director of the School of Anthropology's response was not to verbalize the eviction, but to give the space that Reyes Zapote is using to another professor for what appears to be basically personal use, an office space, something like that. And so Reyes Zapote only found out about the eviction, which is going to be in 2 weeks from yesterday, because this professor came to redesign the space where they work, right? So the director never even bothered to tell Reyes Zapote that he was going to evict them. So now we're here in front of the director's office waiting to be let in to chat. Reyes Zapote is taking the position that they're not going to leave, and because they have the project, though it is sort of separate and autonomous from the university, is complements what the university does, and they dedicate a lot of time to social and anthropological issues, as well as political issues, as well as the live music. It's a cultural force. There's a lot of the students are going to support it. With Radio Zapote, we just met the director of the National School of Anthropology here in Mexico City. So the director agreed in the concrete to the first point, which was yes. Radio Zapote, when it submits a written project, will have a space in the next technical council, and most probably will receive the support of the technical council. On the second point, the director said that yes, he will talk to Thomas Stanford and ask him to respect Radio Zapote and the space, and to tell him that the spaces are in fact being evaluated in the university, but that is the space where it is put into respect. What he did not agree to do was to tell the professor to stay away from Reyes Zapote, or that he didn't even have a right to go there, and that Reyes Zapote didn't want to have anything to do with him. And the third point, his reaction to the third point, which is Reyes Zapote will not leave the space, is that in the cases where the use of the space needs to be evaluated, it will continue to be evaluated, and that he hopes Reyes Zapote will negotiate when the time for negotiation comes, if it comes.
And that is news about Radio Zapote, a free radio station in Mexico City facing possible eviction from the university where it operates. That report comes to us courtesy of Kev and Anto, who posted it to radioindymedia.org. Thanks go out to them. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open-source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.